Welcome to the return of the Parsha panel here at the Database with Rabbi Yeshua Eisenberg, and I'm being joined by my brothers, Rav Daniel and Rav Menachem Mendel Mendy. So welcome both of you back to the Database. Thank you for joining us.
Good to be back.
Always a pleasure.
Baruch Hashem, and we always love having these conversations here, especially about Parsha. And for now, for this particular issue, I wanted to focus on Esav HaRasha, who we might think of as Esav Dodenu, Esav our uncle, who could have possibly...
Uncle Ace.
So, yeah, what I want to focus on particularly is what could have been, or what might have been, alternative paths for Esav. What if Esav had been a tzaddik once upon a time? Was there even a possibility of an Esav Avinu? So I want to get to all of that. Before we do, besides for thanking you guys for joining, I want to thank our sponsors. We have anonymous Luli, Nishmas Shmuel Benachem and Arilev, Leah Bas Avram, and Yehuda Chizdei Akir Ben Rav Shlomo. Their neshama should have an aliyah. And anyone else who wants to partner up with us here at the Database, and if you enjoy the shiurim, you like what we do here, so please also reach out to me at thedatabase@gmail.com. That's thedatabase@gmail.com to make your sponsorship today. So let's talk a little bit about Esav. So we know who Esav is because of who he was. We know what the Torah tells us about him. We know what Chazal teaches us about him. And the first time we meet Esav, we have this natural depiction of this this redhead, this hairy caveman, someone who was born to be evil. And right, we get that from like the opening Rashis that talk about Esav from his conception. Right? And it's kind of like, at first glance, you're like, did Esav ever have a shot? From the time that Vayisrotzitzu Habanim Bekir, but the children are yearning and agitating inside her. And of course, it's Esav, the one who wants to break out to go to the Beis Avodah Zarah. And then you have another Rashi also early on when Esav comes out, Admoni, he's a redhead, says Rashi, based on the Bereishis Rabbah, Simin hu sheyehe shofech damim. Oh, there's a tell-all sign that he's going to be a murderer. So Esav, from the outset, it doesn't look like he has a fair shot. And we know that it couldn't just be that he never had a choice. And obviously, Yitzchak, looking at Esav, saw something different. The question is how much he knew. But the point is that it could not just have been that Esav was doomed to be a Rasha from the start. Right, do we have any initial thoughts on these perplexing Rashis? We meet Esav even before we meet Esav, and we're looking at this Rasha.
Just from my perspective on the matter, if you see a little kid who has like certain disposition to them, that they could end up being a troublemaker when they get older, or they could channel that in a good way. And whatever it is, 10 years down the line, just say, oh, I saw when they were a kid, they had this aspect to them, and they could have been really good, and they could have been that, depending on what it is. You will always be able, hindsight is 20/20, and you would always be able to figure out it makes sense. So I think that Esav, he had disposition to him, he had certain inclinations, and that could have been channeled towards one thing, or could have been channeled towards something else. And I think that, he whatever it means, the prenatal ticking, this happened. Maybe that was nothing. Maybe that was just, he was kicking because that's what babies do in utero. But it could be that after the fact, these things make sense afterwards. When he's not destined to be a murderer. Just that he has the bloodshed to him.
Right, it's a sign.
Yeah, and I remember one time talking with someone years ago. I was on the school bus, and they said that they have an uncle who was a shochet. And I said it, like, is he a redhead? And the person who turned serious is like, oh, you know him? And he was actually surprised.
Interesting.
I said, does that mean all redheads are shochet? Not all redheads are shochet. And not the only thing that a person can do, obviously, but just that I heard that idea and I put it to the test that one time. It was just like very interesting. Like, yeah, a person can be, a person who is prone to bloodshed doesn't mean that they are going to be a murderer, but it's just, yeah, everyone can have a disposition, they are prone to some certain behavior, some certain anything, and it doesn't have to manifest in one way or a different way. It's just how it is.
So my tendency, Rav Mendi, is to agree with that, my natural tendency anyway. Rav Daniel, any related thoughts?
I'm assuming that we want to leave Asa with at least some free will here. I'm not opposed to limiting people's free will in certain contexts, but to say Asa's whole life, he was a robot programmed to be a Rasha, I think is a little bit too much out of my comfort zone of free will. I mean, like when we ask questions like, Paro losing free will, is that possible, and that whole discussion there. So I'm okay. There are much greater minds than me, and the Rishonim that are okay with limiting free will at some point to some degree. You know, there's many things that we do that are not based on free will, that are based on our nature and based on our nurture and not within our Nekudas HaBechira, as Rav Dessler and others put it. But we want to leave a little bit of free will for Esav.
Especially as early as being in utero.
Right. So clearly Chazal are trying to tell us something there. Remendi was saying this, like, maybe it was nothing. So it definitely wasn't nothing. The question is. If we're taking that midrash at face value, which is, also the worthy discussion of, like, was it factually, like, that took place, that she passed by a base of Avodah Zarah, and there was kicking, maybe, but definitely because I was trying to tell us something. So, we can't just dismiss that as something that just happened. But what is the, what was the potential of Esav? Meaning, what is Esav done right? What does that look like? Sometimes people just, there are other people born in the generation who just did not have what it took to be the next, patriarch of Klal Yisrael. There are Avos, there's Avram, there's Yitzhak, and there were millions of people in the world who, even on their best day, working very hard or working very hard for a long time, who would not be one of the Avos. So the question, and what makes Esav stand, above them and closer to the mark, is the fact that he is biologically a grandson of Avraham and a son of Yitzchak and Rivka,
and brother of Yaakov.
So that's a big deal. Brother of Yaakov, so and a twin brother, so identical DNA or similar DNA, very similar. So maybe there's a chance to say Esav could have been the next Av, or it could be Esav's predisposition were just too much for him to overcome. That Esav, because of his, you want to say his tendency towards bloodshed or whatever, or ADHD or whatever he might have, been diagnosed with, would be too much of a hurdle for him to actually become the third Av. But he probably would have looked different than the murderer, rapist, Ovid of Avodah Zarah.
Oh, I think we lost you. Rav Daniel, last thing we heard was Ovid of Avodah Zarah.
Ovid of Avodah Zarah, and a denier of God, and all the other things that Chazal portray him as. But what we have to figure out is, what does the good version of Esav look like? What is the proper Esav done right? Is that one of the Avos? Is that Yaakov's 50-50 partner? Is it something else? What does the good version of Esav look like? So that's, I think, something we have to think about.
Okay, so what I like what you just did there is you now opened up you opened up several different pathways, choose your own destiny. So when it comes to Esav, we have different alternative paths, not just one single path, but different options for what Esav might have been. And you mentioned in there the possibility that, no, maybe Esav never was going to be the patriarch, but maybe it could have been something else. And that maybe Esav never was meant to be, or maybe he was, or maybe he was meant to be something of an equal. So now that we, at least at the moment of this recording, we are at Parshas Vayishlach. We met Esav a couple of weeks ago in Parshas Toldos, and it's in the end of Parshas Vayishlach that we sign off of Esav. And in retrospect, we know what the Navi in Ovadia says in this week's Haftarah about the downfall of Esav. We know what Hashem says in Navi in Malachi, that Hashem, at the end of it, he says, I hated Esav. So what we're looking for is what could have been up until that point. And it could be there were multiple possibilities up until that point of where Esav could have been, what Esav could have ultimately become. So let us talk a little bit about that. So I think a good starting point, besides for what we know about Esav in utero, is the initial nevuah that Rivka receives, at least transmitted to her from shame, that Chazal tell us. The simple line, the Rav Yavod Sa'ir, that the greater or the older is going to serve the younger. So right there, in the nevuah already, at least, it seems like there's a suggestion that the firstborn Esav was not going to be viewed, at least as the firstborn. At least he wouldn't be first. He was going to be serving his brother. So right there we have somewhat of a prediction, and if we can call it that, or a nevuah of what Esav, what his maximum potential was going to be. And what does that look like? And when you hear a Rav Yavod Sa'ir, so to you, what to either of you, what does that mean, Rav Yavod Sa'ir?
So I think it's the Malbim. I could be wrong. Malbim points out the fact that there's no nothing symbolizing a direct object receiving the action there. It doesn't say Rav Yavod Es Tzair. It doesn't say Es Rav Yavod Tzair, which means it takes this mean that it actually can be read as either, because there will be times in history where Rav Yavod Tzair, and there will be times in history where Tzair Yavod Pah. So there, just by dint of that, it seems that there's actual no definitive meaning behind that, because it is lacking the direct object there. It doesn't say Rav Yavod Es Tzair. Rav Yavod Tzair
is that saying that the Tzair will be Yavod the Rav, or the Rav will be Yavod the Tzair? It could be read either way.
Exactly.
So the nevuah is intentionally ambiguous.
Yes.
Okay, so that's interesting. So even there, you can argue that we don't really know who would have been first. And you can argue, so what that sounds like then is, let's say all being equal, it was either going to be Yaakov or Esav, but perhaps neither one of them was going to be equal exactly to the other. There was always going to be one that was before the other, and one alternative path was Esav being the one and Yaakov being second. Right, so that's interesting, because I think we have another conception that we see in the Mefarshim. I don't have specifically offhand which Mefarshim say this, but the idea, the conception of Yisachar-Zevulun relationship between Yaakov and Esav, which Rav Daniel, which you alluded to, my Bechor brother alluded to, the possibility of a sort of equal relationship where one is doing Torah, the other one's doing Parnasa. And in this vein, presumably, Esav is the one who is making the Parnasa. Yaakov is the one is the Yoshev Ohalim, who is learning the Torah. And in that vein, it sounds like Yaakov, in that version, Yaakov ends up being first, or they're being equal, right? But from the Nevuah, it sounds like there's for sure that's going to be one that's a little bit higher than the other. Okay. Yeah. So that's.
I'm not finding it. I was under the impression that Ibn Ezra also made that ha'ara, which by also I mean, close to like oh, 600 years earlier than the album. But I'm having trouble finding it inside, though. Like, he says,
I don't see it in even Ezra Eide.
It could be it wasn't
yeah.
even Ezra Eide.
Yeah, but
I don't think it was, but that sounds like the kind of comment the Malbim would make.
Yeah, but Chizkuni quotes it as well. Chizkuni is probably quoting an early parish, likely Ibn Ezra. But yes, and as Sfarno is one of the earlier sources that suggests that maybe there was a different role for Esav and Yaakov, and they're both, you know, included in the plan. Sfarno has such an approach later, and then I think many more contemporary scholars try to find a way to make sense of that, and they even present it in the situation of Yaakov having to marry two wives.
Okay, so
coming into that.
So I want to get to that.
We could hold.
Yeah. So I'll definitely say that. However, you know, I think a big point here is that even Rashi is not trying to strip Esav of his free will, because we know that if Esav had become something else, Rashi would be telling a different story. Right, Rashi, the story wouldn't be about how Esav was destined to be a Shofeh Damim, but we would have heard about how Esav overcame those dispositions and those tendencies that he had. That's what Esav could have been. And there are many who talk about this idea that Yaakov might have been considered like the Chassid Me'ula, the Tzadik Gamor, you know, nothing's wrong with him, whereas the Esav would have had to work harder as the Baal Teshuva, the Kovesh Yetzer. That would have been the kind of Midah that we would have seen out of someone like Esav. But of course, we know that Esav ended up selling the Bechorah, and Yaakov sensed already at that point that Esav was not in the right direction to serve Hashem properly, and then we know that Yaakov ends up getting the Brachos. Now the question is, while we are talking about what the alternative possibilities for Esav were, so what did Yitzchak think the plan was supposed to be? And even there, you have difference of opinion. If you look in the Ramban is very explicit that Esav, that Yitzchak thought that the Birchas Avram was going to go to Esav. The Ramban's very clear. He says that Esav was going to get the Birchas Avram, that Yitzchak naturally thought the firstborn Esav was the one who was destined to that bracha, and that's what was planned for him, and Rivka intercepted it. However, the Beis Halevi, which Rav Yonason Sacks quotes every year, the Beis Halevi says that the Birchas Avram was never going to go to Esav. It was always going to go to Yaakov. And the proof is in the Parsha, it's in the pudding. The proof in the Parsha is that when Yitzchak blesses the person who he thinks might be Esav, he does not say, I'm giving you the Birchas Avram. He only says Birchas Avram when he's giving it to Yaakov explicitly. Meaning, the bracha that Yitzchak wanted to give to Esav, says the Beis Halevi, was a gashmiyastika bracha that had nothing to do with the Birchas Avram. And that's what he, and Rivka Imenu, her counter response to that was, no, Yaakov needs both brachos. But that's the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi says that Esav was never going to be number one. And that even Yitzchak knew, even the best, on Esav's best day, Esav wasn't going to be number one. So we have, even within the Yitzchak track, what did Yitzchak know? What did Yitzchak think? How much about Esav did Yitzchak know? Did Yitzchak know that Esav was a Rasha? We know that he didn't like Esav's wives, but how much did he know? Or how much did he plan for Esav to be number one? So that's a machlokas among the Mefarshim already. But we see multiple possibilities there. Now, another thing that I think is worth pointing out is that when Rashi tells us Shnei Goyim Bevetneich, so remember who Rashi says that's a reference to. Rashi doesn't say Yaakov and Esav. He says Rebbe and Antoninus. Right, so we have Rebbe Yehuda Nasi on the one hand and Antoninus. Now, Antoninus was considered a very great figure. Now, he wasn't a Yid, he wasn't a Ben Yisrael, right, but he was considered very great. And apparently there was a role. We see already that there's a role, a Kedusha Dika role, or at least a positive spin on what Esav was supposed to be, that there's a positive manifestation of Esav in this world coming right from Antoninus, and right out of the Nevuah, already from the Nevuah, you see that it wasn't that, oh, you know, you have good guy and bad guy. No, you have Rebbe and Antoninus. So, again, further manifestations of what a positive Esav would have looked like. So, I want to move back over to the point that you made, Rav Daniel, about Yaakov having married more than one wife. Now, we know because of the circumstances of the pregnancies and the fertility why Yaakov ended up marrying four wives, at least I'll peep shot from the story, but at the very least, it didn't have to be two. And at first glance, from just looking at the text of the Chumash, you don't really know that Esav has a shaychus to any of this, but you look in the Midrashim, they talk about at least the first possibility of who Esav might have married, all things going well, so, or maybe all things not going well, depending on how you want to look at it. Midrashim say that there was this presumption of Esav marrying Leah. Right, this is the famous Midrash about Leah crying, about her eyes being tender. Ibn Ezra says, don't look too much into it. Don't think that you can understand why Hashem makes someone look the way they look. But the Midrash says that Leah was crying because people were saying, oh, the older one with the older one, the younger one with the younger one. Yaakov's going to marry Rachel, and Esav's going to marry Leah. So that already seems like there was a plan of some sort for Esav to marry Leah. And maybe Esav as a tzaddik, that wouldn't have been such a bad thing. Right, so that's one possibility. But then we kind of see sources that point to another possibility of who Esav was supposed to marry. Are you guys familiar?
So Dina.
Oh, okay. So we'll get to that. I think there's even another alternative before we get to Dina. Before we get to Dina.
Rachel.
Right, because even though, and I can give you a source in Chazal, and then I can give you possibly a logical suggestion. But the source in Chazal is that Rashi quotes it also based on a piyut. The Paitan writes that the Rasha put his eyes on Rachel when he saw that she wasn't having kids. When Rachel says that Hashem has gathered in my embarrassment, Hashem has gathered in my shame, so Rachel says, I thought Esau was going to want to marry me because I was barren. And I think you once suggested to me that when I asked you about it, I think just last week, why was the barrenness of Rachel a reason why Esav would want to marry her? So perhaps Yaakov would have said, oh, listen, I'm not gaining anything from Rachel in this marriage. She's not producing children, so maybe Yaakov would leave Rachel, and then Rachel would fall into the hands of Esav.
And right, we see. Or that I said that, or maybe guaranteed birth control.
Maybe guaranteed birth barren, control.
You don't have to worry about that, which we see was something that we see with the Lemech and his two wives.
All right, the Dor and Mava.
There's a good trivia question. Two people with two people in the Chumash with a wife named Ada. So.
Oh, interesting.
A wife named is Esav and Lemech. They both had two wives, at least the first. Esau had two wives. Could be both Adas were
Esau's wives were Yehudas and Basmas. I thought did one of them have another name?
That's what you would think back in Parshas Toldos.
Right.
Parshas Yishlach. Rashi and Toldos, right, says that their names are changed. Jewish names like Yehudas and Basmas.
Right.
Rashi points out that the Ada by Ada and Tila, Ada was the one for children, procreation.
Yes.
Right. And obviously it didn't work because both Ada and Tila had children.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, because sometimes birth control fails, that's a fair possibility. And certainly in those times, I don't know how much expertise they had in the area, but certainly we see that as a possibility. And in this week's parsha, Yosef is blocking Rachel because I don't want the Rasha to be litlos his eyes upon her, and he's going to try to take her. So now it sounds like there's a possibility that Esav marries Rachel. Now a logical reason would be that we know that Yaakov ends up marrying both wives because apparently Yaakov has to take on the role of both his own and Esav's, right? So, and we spoke about this in Parsha Panorama, that Yaakov is taking on two identities. This would explain why Rivka puts him up to the craft of deception, which is taken right out of the playbook of Esav. Yaakov has to put on the persona to be an ish sadeh. You know, Yaakov in Parshas Vayetze, the pasuk tells us he goes out to the sadeh. So Yaakov is going into the terrain of Esav. You might suggest that when Yaakov switched roles with Esav and Yaakov becomes the Bechor, that maybe Yaakov's new betrothed, his new Basheret, is supposed to be Leah, naturally leaving Rachel to be with Esav. Meaning even though Yaakov wanted Rachel, you could argue that, no, Yaakov, you're the Bechor now. You go with the Bechorah, you go with Leah. And by all reason, Rachel ends up with Esav. So, you know, meaning the younger with the younger, so to speak.
That's definitely a possibility.
So Yaakov and Esav almost like trading roles. So then maybe Rachel. And so the point is that clearly that Leah and Rachel, whichever one was originally supposed to be with Yaakov, so they both might speak to the two different roles that Yaakov had at the time. And Esav should have naturally been one of those individuals either. And now the question is that does Esav become a patriarch or does Esav just become a really awesome uncle, you know, a great brother to Yaakov to help Klal Yisrael like Antoninus did, to be an ally of the Bnei Yisrael, to walk side by side with Yaakov, which was what almost happened in Parshas Vayishlach as well. But we know that's not what happened. And the point is that I think another important thing, which we keep on coming back to, Rav Daniel, that you started us off with, is that there isn't just one alternative path for Esav. And in life, there isn't only one alternative path. There are infinite number of paths that a person could take in a lichatchila way, in a bidyeved way, what you're going to do with your life, and how far off could you go. And even if a person does go off the derech, they can always do tshuva. And it seems, as you alluded to, with Dina, that should have been the case. Right, Chazal talk about where was Dina? She was in the box. So tell us a little bit about that.
Chazal seemed to indicate that, and there's some Bali Musar who take a different approach, but the face value version of this midrash, quoted by Rashi, is that after the encounter of Esav and Yaakov in this week's parsha. So immediately after that scene, or just about immediately, we see the abduction and rape of Dina, and Chazal attribute that to Dina, or at least partially attribute that to Dina being placed in the box instead of letting Dina be exposed to Esav, or Esav be exposed to Dina and marrying her, and she could help bring him. To do tshuva. So this one just small point I'll mention that Har I had is that it's almost like this was his opportunity to give back the wife he took, right? He took Leah, who really should have been Esav's,
okay.
And Yaakov took her. Now he didn't mean to take her, but by taking the bracha, he by taking the bechorah. So he took the other Bechorah, or the Bechira, the older daughter of Laban, and now how do you pay back? You can't divorce her and send her back, but you can take her daughter. And there's an emphasis on this is Bas Leah, this is the daughter Leah. We see over here Chazal say Keima Kabita, like mother, like daughter, Vateitzei Dina, Vateitzei Leah. So this was like an opportunity to give. Not Leah back to Esav, but at least Leah's daughter Dina back to Esav. It's like an opportunity, and fell short of that. And this could have been something that helped bring Esav back, at least to some degree. So that's just one horror I had that I think is a significant point. Another failed Bashert, if you can call it, of Esav's.
And I think you've also pointed out in the past that we see some support in the potential of Dina being able to be the means by which people come closer to Yishkai under the Kanfei Shechina. We see it in the next story.
Right. Yeah, in the entire next story. So in that essay, I suggest that one of the main points of the entire next story. Why did she get punished in such a way? Because Yaakov did this. Like, why did it happen? So it's trying to demonstrate a point to Yaakov that you see the power of Dina, that she was able to get an entire city of Canaanim to be circumcised because of her, something special about her. So imagine what that could have done to somebody who's already circumcised, Esav. Chazal said that explicitly. They say you could have married her off to someone who's circumcised, to Nimal. Now, and so she's going to be taken by an Arel. So it could be that does demonstrate that. But that's
right. And we see
a long discussion.
You see it in the readiness of Shechem, like so quickly he was ready. And I guess now this doesn't take the liability off Esav for not having done Shuvah, but we see. Again, more alternative paths. Like there's a rule in life that just it's never too late to do tshuva, and so even if Esav had gone bad, even if he had soured, he could have always returned. And
right. So I think. Yeah. Sorry.
No. Go ahead.
I think we have to look at something else. Is there anybody else in Esau's category? So Chazal point out, there are a couple of Amar Chazal that speak about this. I know I saw Targum Yomson last week, and definitely in the Svarim HaKadoshim and Sefer Kabbalah, Dvar Chassidus, they speak about this concept of the psoles, of Avraham, and there are some refuse of Avraham that has to come out, this psoles of chesed, that sometimes chesed is done in an inappropriate way, and that was like filtered out through Yishmael, and the pure chesed goes into Yitzchak. Yitzchak had this gevura, and the psoles of the gevura.
So Yishmael, you're saying Yishmael is the psoles of chesed, Avraham's chesed, the refuse of that.
This is not at all my chiddush. And the psoles of Gvura goes out through Esav, and Yaakov is like the pure Gvura of Yitzhak, and I guess the mix of the chesed. Okay,
where's the psoles of the MS?
I don't think
so. There isn't.
That's the whole point. MS is the balance.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a Kabbalistic way to refer to it in the terms of Chesed Gevura Tiferes. Yes. There's a less Kabbalistic way in some of the other sources in Chazal that just say it's the psoles of Avraham and the psoles of Yitzhak, that everyone has this psoles. And then right, that was the whole question. Does Yaakov have psoles too? Are there descendants of Yaakov that are also not so? And that's a question. There's a Havamina, maybe Reuven is not that, because Reuven sins, and there's a that after Reuven does what he does with Bilhah, you can listen to our other shir on the database podcast where we discuss what Reuven did with Bilhah, but that
or so didn't do.
The Midrash says what he did or didn't do. So Midrash says Yaakov thought, oh no, this is the psoles of me, this is my bad son. And then the Basel comes out and says, no, but you, Israel, there are 12 of them. They're all tzaddikim. Okay, good.
And Bilam, and Bilam's donkey had nowhere to go because Yaakov, has no psoles, right? He has different paths when he first
right.
There's Avraham,
right. Yes,
Yitzchak,
yes.
And then he gets to Yaakov.
Yeah.
He can't.
Many sources in Chazal for that concept. So there's the Havamina, but we should put Esav in a category with maybe Yishmael, right? So according to this approach in Chazal, it seems that Esav had no shot. There was no question he was going to be one of the Avos, no question. He was that he was not going to be, because he was naturally Pesoles. So there's a Kabbalistic way, to refer to it, and then there's a non-Kabbalistic way to refer to it. So there's no way he's going to be an Av according to this approach, at least within this Maamar Chazal. But perhaps we can look at him like Yishmael. We know that there's a machlokes, but it's the more famous opinion, since it's quoted by Rashi, that Yishmael did tshuva.
Right.
So Yishmael was kicked out at first. He was told very clearly, you cannot inherit in Bini Yitzchak. You cannot. You have to be kicked out of the house and stay far away for a little bit. But ultimately, we know that, at least in the mainstream approach in Yishmael did tshuva. We have Tanayim and Amorayim named Yishmael, because Yishmael did tshuva. So this is an example of maybe what could have been with Esau. Did Esau do tshuva at the end? He's pretty nice, but he's not given that credit.
He's not given that credit by Chazal and not by
right,
the Navi.
Exactly.
One of the pasuk where it says Yishmael, so that Yitzchak and Yishmael went to bury Avraham, but it says Esav and Yaakov went to bury Yitzchak.
Good point. Good diuk. Right, the Medrash derives from the fact that Yishmael let Yitzchak go first to bury Avraham when it came to burying Yitzchak, so we don't find that Esav let Yaakov go first.
Right. I'll be pshat what you could say over there is that
Yaakov was Mavater, maybe. Probably.
No, I'll be pshat. I would say that Yishmael is the son of the Pilegesh.
Okay.
Everyone agreed the primary wife was Sarah, and therefore the primary Zera was clearly Yitzchak. And he was explicitly banished, even if he was later brought close.
I hear.
Yaakov Esav. But for sure, if we're working within the Diuk of Chazal, which, many is true, is correct, the Diuk of Chazal is why why Yitzhak is placed before Yishmael is because Yishmael did the tshuva, so we do not see that. So according to Chazal, with that line of thought, Esav did not do tshuva. But maybe he could have been Yishmael. Maybe we would name our kids Esav had Yitzhak done tshuva. We named our kids Yishmael. I mean, I don't. And I don't know if you do. If you plan on naming any children Yishmael. It's a beautiful name. I imagine since the rise of Islam, it's gotten less popular, but Yishmael was, the Tanaim and Amoraim named Yishmael, that was before the rise of Islam, so that's a little bit different. Maybe that's the version. That Esau could have been, had he done Shuva, had he married Dina, whatever it might have been, he could have been like Yishmael.
But again, also, like, just a holy, a haliga ally to the Klal Yisrael. And we see that there, that potential existed and was manifest in Antoninus. So again, there was always that possibility. And another wrinkle to all of this is another Maimer Chazal that this is usually used to exclude Yishmael, ki be Yitzchak yikara lechazara. And Yitzchak is going to be called your Zerah, right? But they say not just that, it's not just to the exclusion of Yishmael, but as my Rebbe quotes often, it's also to the exclusion of Esav. Ki bi Yitzchak v'lo kol Yitzchak. Meaning in Yitzchak, but not all of Yitzchak. So, that could be also taken to mean that Yitzchak, also Esav was never going to be number one, and he was never going to be named the Zerah Avraham. He was never going to be named the Zerah Yitzchak. But that doesn't mean he couldn't have been really good. And just, Hashem has a different role for everyone, just like Hashem has a different role for Bnei Bechori Yisrael. And for the difference between Yisrael la'amim and the amim have an important role here as well. So and it can't be understated what their role is. And it's the same as ours. Essentially, it's to serve Hashem and just us leading the way as the Or LaGoyim. But that option was always open to all of us. You mentioned just the idea of the psolus of Gevura. So Esav is this refuse of what should have been the positive midah of Gevura. So it's just interesting because we've had conversations in the past about which did Leah and Rachel represent, right? Did Leah represent the chesed and Rachel the Gevura, or vice versa? And that might require a separate analysis of just those two. There are midrashim that talk about the midos of Rachel and Leah. Rachel has the midah of shtika, Leah has the midah of hodah, and it's probably well beyond the scope of our discussion. But it just goes back to who was supposed to be the one that would go would have been married to Yaakov, who would have been married to Esau. But what I think is clear is that. You can't just look at Esav in a vacuum and think of the Rasha that he was without thinking about the tzaddik he could have been and how many different possibilities and opportunities there were for that to have happened. I think exploring those alternative paths is not only just a good exercise for us, but it teaches us about the story that could have been told about Esav. And of course, the story that it's now the untold story of Esav because it's the story that didn't take place. But it should give each of us a certain sense of chizik about what opportunities are available to us and how many times those windows of opportunities present themselves, because it's never the end. You could always... So my brothers, I'm telling you, it's not too late.
Good to know.
Anyway... I think that takes us to the end of a very interesting conversation, and I appreciated having you guys here for it as always. So thank you for joining us here. I love having this Parsha panel. So Shkoyach Rav Daniel, Shkoyach Rav Mehdi, thank you for joining.
Thank you for having.
My pleasure. It's my responsibility as the Bechor. So try to retain those rights.
And my job to steal them.
And it's my responsibility as the younger brother to listen to the older brother. So.
Yeah. And it's everyone else's responsibility to listen to all of us. So thank you all for listening, and make sure you send us other people.
But we would love to listen to you, and we'd love to hear feedback. So please send any feedback.
Yes, to the database at gmail.com. And I'll also mention while I'm at it is that we have schedule updates frequently on the database WhatsApp group, which you could also join if you reach out to me at thedatabase@gmail.com. And it's a good place to see what's upcoming. And from there, you could even WhatsApp me if you have recommendations on Shiurim you would like to hear on the podcast or even on the Parsha panel. So anything that might interest you, please reach out to us. In the meantime, Shkoyach, everyone, for listening. Shkoyach to my brothers for joining. Thank you for joining us here at The Database.